Nation. We don't need no thought control.
Welcome to Education Nation, where every Saturday morning at 10:30, we grab our second cup of coffee and tackle the biggest issues in American education. Your host is the headmaster of Liberty Classical Academy, Rebecca Hagstrom, along with co-host Mark Durkin. School is now in session.
Well, good morning, and thank you for joining us here on Education Nation. I'm your host, Rebecca Hagstrom, and it's always so much fun and such a privilege to join you all on Saturday mornings. And I'm joined here in studio once again by the producer of Education Nation, our co-host, Mark Durkin.
And good morning to you again, Rebecca.
Good morning. Well, last week we introduced our audience to the nation's new education secretary, Mrs. Betsy DeVos. She's an ardent supporter of school choice and vouchers, and DeVos has spent a large part of her life dedicated to helping low-income families and their kids pursue the education of their choice. And to be exact, DeVos's American Federation of Children nonprofit has bipartisan support in several states, and potentially her biggest impact in education reform has helped more than 400,000 low-income students pursue the education of their choice.
That's right, Rebecca. Despite sending several decades putting children first when it comes to education, Betsy DeVos has been on the receiving end, though, of a lot of vitriol, a lot of criticism from teachers' unions to politicians, and opposition from sources that you wouldn't expect for someone who champions charter schools and school choice, such as the Stop Common Core in Michigan group from her home state. We'll get into that more specifically in just a few minutes with today's guest, who is quite distinguished in education on a national level.
That's right. And we're so thankful to have today's guests on. She has made many contributions in the realm of education. And we welcome Joy Pullman by telephone. And she is the managing editor of The Federalist, an online magazine that covers politics, policy, culture, and religion. And she's also an education research fellow at the Heartland Institute, and she received a Robert Novak Journalism Fellowship to fund research and reporting on Common Core. Not only is she very knowledgeable on Common Core, but Joy Pullman has also taught at grade levels from preschool to high school. She's tutored college students and has written public speaking curriculums. Joy, we're so happy to hear or have you here this morning to talk with us about Betsy DeVos and her transition. Welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me.
Well, we're very glad to have you here. And as I mentioned to you before the show, I've kept up with you a little bit, Joy, through your Heartland Institute writings. And back when I was beginning to research Common Core and becoming very concerned about it, I somehow came across your writings and found them always to be very well-researched and thought out. And for me, that's a really important detail. We want to make sure that we're speaking truth when we are talking mm-hmm. about something as big as Common Core and education. And I've found you to always be careful with your facts. You don't throw facts around loosely. And so that's something I really admire about you.
It was really important to me to always be careful about the facts because a lot of the folks were telling our lawmakers and the press that the Common Core critics were just a bunch of crazy moms who are overreacting emotionally. So in order to kind of counter that personal smear, it's always been important to me to go, you know, be able to support the assertions that I make with evidence, with research, with, you know, reporting of the facts on the ground.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Well, I've really appreciated that. And tell us a little bit, before we get talking about Betsy DeVos, tell us a little bit how you got interested in researching Common Core and education in general.
Back in 2012, I was working at the Heartland Institute. I was running their education newspaper. They're a state-focused policy think tank, and so they run a number of papers about all the big things that states spend, their lawmakers spend their time and your money on, and so on. Half of states' budgets typically are spent on education. I went to a local presentation by a couple of moms in fall of 2012 So we're talking about Common Core back at a time when nobody was talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually I wrote a book about the research that I spent a number of years doing on Common Core. It's called Education Invasion. And in there, I went through LexisNexis and I calculated the mentions of Common Core in major newspapers. And so I can say with data, like I was talking about earlier, specifically that almost nobody was reporting it back in 2012. But these two moms who went on to lead our Common Core revolution, our repeal effort in Indiana where I live, they were the ones giving that presentation. So when I listened to them later on, one of them gave me a call and said, look, there's going to be this curriculum meeting in Indianapolis. I can't get into it. You know, they're talking about this. Can you? And I was a reporter. I called them up, you know, saying, hey, look, this is a public meeting funded by public dollars. Just wondering what y'all are doing, you know, thinking about having our kids learn. It took me 10 weeks and long after the event was over to get a response back after pestering everybody at every single number I could find.
Wow.
To have them say that these meetings were closed to the public.
Wow.
You know, and I almost never were reporters allowed to go. And I'm sitting here thinking, this isn't a national security event, you know, they're talking, and I've, you know, I've subsequently been to some of these meetings, you know, it's very boring technical information sometimes. and they didn't want the public to come in, you know, and just hear what they're doing with our kids and with our tax dollars. So that was kind of what made me say something is strange about this situation, and, you know, I just started looking into it.
Right. Well, and good thing you did, because there are a lot of red flags associated with what the kids are being taught, and specifically now through Common Core. And so your persistence paid off, and you've clearly become an expert now, a national expert, and we're so thankful to have you on the show. You know, we've covered Common Core on three different shows here at Liberty, at Education Nation. And I wanted to, maybe instead of me speaking about Common Core, have you give our listeners just a very brief rundown about what Common Core is and the history of how it became a key part of our educational system.
That's a great question. Luckily, it's actually pretty simple to answer. A lot of people, I think people make money and they win politically by obfuscating the truth, but the simple truth is that Common Core is a 640-page document and a set of national, federally funded tests that go with it that between them aim to define what every child in every American school, K-12, learns, and primarily in math and English, but also in some other classes.
Right.
And so the Gates Foundation, the biggest philanthropy in the world, funded the creation of Common Core inside a bunch of private organizations. And then when the Obama administration came to power in 2009, a number of Gates officials actually transferred or waived ethics requirements in order to join the Obama administration and then enact, basically take that privately funded program and nationalize it.
Yeah.
And so they did that with a $4.35 billion from the stimulus bill that Congress in all its wisdom had just given to the U.S. Department of Education. And they told states, you know, reorient your education systems around this program for what kids need to know. And if you do that, you'll have a chance at some extra money from the federal government. So almost every state signed contracts with the federal government and with these private groups that made Common Core, agreeing months before a draft of the document was even available, that they wouldn't, you know, overhaul their education systems in accordance to what it says.
Right.
And so that's what Common Core is. It's kind of a nutshell of how it came into place. And, you know, then that explains kind of why most Americans hadn't heard about it, even though it's kind of it's a major change in American education, kind of similar to Obamacare. And everybody knows about Obamacare. But and it happened at the same time as Common Core, but almost nobody knew about it in a similar fashion.
Yeah, it was much more under the wire. And, you know, I refer to what you were just saying as sight unseen, that the states basically were offered these Race to the Top grants to accept standards sight unseen. And they were motivated to do that because they wanted to get out from underneath the No Child Left Behind regulations, which was also a carrot that they used. And so it's true that these swept our nation. I think I think of 47 states adopted it at first. I think we're down to now 40 that still have Common Core standards. Is that correct?
Depends on how you count. So initially, it was 46 states, kind of in a half. Minnesota is the half state,
right?
That signed
on
to the project.
Just to quick interrupt, I always say that though we didn't officially adopt the math standards, by default we have because the testing is aligned with the standards. So,
right. Yeah. That's what I mean when I say it depends how you count. So if you count, you know, are the schools de facto doing it because of the test they're doing? Or, for example, since the Common Core backlash, something like about half of the states have changed the name of the standards. They've added a few things to it, but the bulk of what is the program that they demand kids teach through their tests and their curriculum requirements, 95%, 93% still Common Core. You know, so still almost all of the states, the 46, 47, even the states that didn't initially adopt it, such as Alaska, such as Virginia, they've incorporated, they are using the test, they've incorporated the overarching goals and some of the details of Common Core. So it is still essentially a national program.
Yeah. You know, I know that there were two tests that were made, but Joy, that one was from the Park Organization and one was from the, what was the other one? Do you remember the name? Off the top
Smarter
of your
balance.
Head. Smarter Balance. Now, I just was doing some research on that and found that they have not been adopted by all the states. And I believe that those two tests were the ones developed to try to kind of have this top-down control of education, where if they all
had
to adopt the standards and they all had to take these tests. And then the SAT was even revamped then now by David Coleman, who was one of the chief authors of the standards. It seems like, just like Obamacare, when they tried to control everything, it does seem like there's a little bit of crumbling there because I don't think all the states have adopted those tests. Am I correct?
Well, absolutely. Well, in fact, almost the same number of states signed on to those tests, and they're meant as an enforcement mechanism for the standards. There's a lot of talk by former Education Secretary Arne Duncan, for example, about how the tests are supposed to basically make the teachers teach what they dictated the teachers must teach through Common Core. So again, initially almost all the states signed on, 45, 46 states, to these two federally funded testing groups. That I read, you know, their 1,500 pages of documents that they submitted to the government. They agreed to share testing data to kind of correlate their testing results with each other. You know, so, you know, they also can be seen as somewhat of a unit.
Mm-hmm.
But the rollout of those tests did not go as planned. We had all these really great promises for how, you know, next generation they would be, pushing the envelope, all this, that, and the other, the kind of PR speak you hear from every new initiative.
Right.
But right now, as the tests rolled out into states, states quickly dropped their participation just because, you know, as a number of people were saying, they were building the airplane while they were trying to fly it. They hadn't pilot tested it. You know, their items were not reliable. You know, there was never released any public data about how accurate the testing results were to what kids actually know. So it was a big, giant mess. And so the initiative went from about 45, 46 states doing those tests to now fewer than half of the states are still participating in the test.
Okay. And I knew that number had been reduced significantly, and you did such a great job of summarizing that for our listeners, because that's a big, big piece of the overall control. So I personally am very happy to see that those tests are crumbling under the pressure of them not having been very well designed in the first place. So that's a good thing. Well, listen,
Because, again, that's the enforcement mechanism. You know, if you can't enforce it, that gives teachers more freedom to do, you know, interpret things their own way.
Exactly. Well, listen, we're actually going to take a brief break right now, Joy, and when we come back after the break, we are going to turn our attention again to Betsy DeVos and her positions on Common Core. So join us after the break.
We don't need no education.
And welcome back to Education Nation. I am your co-host, Mark Durkin, again joined by host Rebecca Hagstrom. And we are also joined over the telephone by Joy Pullman of the Heartland Institute and also a columnist for The Federalist Web Magazine, also a business manager. And she is joining us this morning to talk about a myriad of issues as they pertain to Common Core. And now we are going to turn our attention to Betsy DeVos. And as we had mentioned mentioned earlier in our first segment, a key anti-Common Core group in her home state of Michigan, the Stop Common Core in Michigan, just flat out opposed DeVos's nomination for education secretary. They say she's a part of the swamp in Michigan as a proponent of Common Core. And as an influential Republican, they say she fought every effort to stop the group's work against Common Core. They also say that the Great Lakes Education Project, this is a nonprofit that DeVos founded, she has funded in the past, and has served on the board, has a stated priority of, quote, implementing and maintaining Common Core high standards reforms. So that begs the question this morning, Joy. In addition to these statements, what do you know from your research about Betsy DeVos's stance on Common Core?
Well, those statements are actually some of the best ones that I have found that get us down to the real question of what her stance is on the issue. Since she was nominated Education Secretary by President Trump, Betsy DeVos, you know, tweeted out a statement saying that she is not a supporter of Common Core and that, you know, people who think otherwise need to check their facts. You know, but the Michigan folks, the grassroots folks there have, you know, personal testimony from right. people who worked with Betsy DeVos, and I find that pretty reliable.
Mm-hmm.
And after Betsy DeVos was confirmed as education secretary, both she and Trump advisor Kellyanne Conway, you know, came out publicly, you know, and reiterated President Trump's support for repealing Common Core and saying that that would be her mission to carry out his promises, you know, to America. So it seems to me that as best I can tell from the evidence, and that's really all we have to go on. I have been
right.
seeking, you know, private and public evidence more about her position on that, and it's been very hard to find. And I am disappointed in the transparency of our public institutions
yes.
that, for example, you know, senators, I worked with a number of them during the confirmation hearings. I asked them to ask her, you know, point blank about these issues, and they decided that wasn't what they wanted to use the hearing for. It was mostly consumed with political theater. That's all we have to go on right now. So I think my conclusion on that is it seems that privately she supported its enactment in Michigan, and she says that she will not only not support it at the federal level, but work to restore local control to the states. And so until she does actually any actions in this regard, I think it's fair to take her at her word and just wait and see what she does and then respond accordingly.
Mm-hmm. Sure, and I think that begs the question then, why does it matter what she thinks about Common Core?
Right, that's a good question. Well, I think for me, at this point, someone's understanding of the Common Core issue is key in kind of predicting how they're going to think about education policy in general.
Okay.
The people who support Common Core tend to be what I call technocrats, you know, people who think that the elites who are far away from children, who are far away from families, are still somehow knowledgeable enough to decide how the minute details of their lives, of their classrooms, of their education need to be run. So someone who supports Common Core tends to buy into that kind of failed central planning idea. That's not always the case. I can understand a situation in which where a state had lower quality expectations for kids than Common Core. It might be on a state-by-state basis. They could say, look, you know, we're increasing the expectations for the kids if we do this, even though it's not really that great of a program, so on and so forth. But overall, that's that plus the education secretary, she has very, very wide power. For example, one of them is states have to come to the federal government and have it approve in detail their testing systems, their curriculum requirements. That's baked into the way that we run education policy now. And so as the secretary, DeVos and her staff, you know, have that oversight over what kids are learning already.
Okay.
And so therefore her ideas about what constitute good curriculum, what is acceptable for testing requirements, you know, her support for Common Core kind of indicates to us how she will use her power as secretary to tell states what they can and cannot teach kids.
Right, mm-hmm. right. And that's an important detail, too, that I want to highlight for our listeners, that even if she doesn't necessarily support it outwardly at the federal level the way the Obama administration did by offering the Race to the Top grants, she could still quietly support it at the state level, couldn't she?
Oh, yeah. So, well, there's a number of ways that the Education Department influences all of these sorts of related parts. So, for example, it gives lots and lots of money to states and to school districts for things like training teachers, for things like developing testing systems, so on and so forth. So these are all kind of parts of the Common Core machine that the education department, you know, has a great amount of power to influence. So, for, you know, if they're paying for teacher training that is Common Core-minded teacher training, well, that is using its power and its money, our money, to reinforce, you know, a mode of education that we, you know, that a lot of people disagree is good for American kids.
Exactly.
You know, I just want to throw this question out there too, Joy. You know, we talked earlier about, you know, her, Betsy DeVos is coming together with Donald Trump. It's known that she first supported Senator Marco Rubio during the primary and then Governor Kasich as a delegate at the RNC. In fact, Breitbart posted a picture of Betsy DeVos actually remaining seated as Donald Trump was receiving a standing round of applause. What is it that really brought DeVos and President Trump together on education? I mean, do you think this was really just to satisfy, say, the establishment section of the Republican Party, or is there something more to it?
Well, I can't, I mean, I don't know the, I do not know for sure the answer to that question, but I can give you some information to help maybe, you know, inform what we're thinking about here. So, for example, the people that have been moving into the education department while DeVos's confirmation was moving forward are people who, a large number of them have connections to the Jeb Bush kind of wing of the Republican Party in education reform. So, for your listeners who don't know, you know, that's a very pro-Common Core side of very technocrat-minded in terms of education policy.
Got it.
So when people say, you know, personnel is policy, seeing those people who view education light, and to use their power under DeVos's purview. But when you're talking about, you know, her sitting down at the Republican convention while Donald Trump was announced as the nominee, that could be, it's hard to know how to read that because Donald Trump himself is not a conventional conservative.
Right.
He's not a Tea Party kind of guy. Mm-hmm. So, and I have read statements from DeVos speaking at places like the Heritage Foundation where she sounds extremely, you know, rock-ribbed, limited government, you know, saying, look, the bureaucracy is out of whack, you know, our spending is out of whack, we need to cut the government down to size. And so, you know, she could be, have been sitting down because Donald Trump that doesn't represent that view of, you know, limited government as far as I can tell.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, again, we're kind of, you know, trying to read the tea leaves here without very good information to go on. And again, it's a disappointment to me that we don't have more to go on because, look, we're the American people. We are supposed to hold our elected representatives accountable. And how can we do that when we don't know whether their values and ideas and policies are going to align with ours?
Well, and especially when he made, when Trump made that such a large part of his platform, you know, he went around campaigning on, we are going to remove Common Core. And so for him to make such a big deal out of it during his campaigning, you'd think that he would continue to be making a big deal out of it with his education secretary, and yet that's not what we're seeing. And then when you saw the resistance of some of the legislators that were on the committee for even asking those questions, clearly there is something happening there that has changed ever so slightly. And we hope that they will continue to push for the removal of Common Core, even in the states, to the degree that they can. And that would be my hope anyway. I'm going to turn.
I mean, that is the promise that the president, you know, and DeVos has made very directly. And so, again, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt until I see otherwise. But the indications are making me suspicious so far.
Exactly.
I'm worried.
I know. And I am too. And I think a lot of others join us in that concern. So Joy, I'm going to turn our attention to an article that you wrote last December entitled Seven Things Betsy DeVos Needs to Do Immediately After She Becomes Education Secretary. And while we can't get into all the details of that article, it was an excellent article. I'd recommend people look it up by Joy Pullman. But one of the things that you mentioned is that there is a supplement, not supplant, regulation in the Every Child Succeeds Act. And that has brought forth some concern. And that's left over from the Obama regulations. And so you were recommending that get removed along with several other regulations. Can you tell us a little bit about that regulation and what has the Republicans up in arms over that regulation?
Well, it's kind of a complicated issue that I have to reveal. I do not understand in full, but the overall impression I have is that the idea of supplement, not supplant, is kind of a very long standing kind of proclivity in federal education policy, that they want the money that they provide to local school districts to supplement, not supplant. So they don't want to replace local funding streams. They don't want them. they basically want them to continue increasing their budgets every year. and long story short, the regulations that the Obama administration had written just as it was departing office were leading in a way asked to give the federal government a very large amount of power over local school district spending and school budgets, mm-hmm. which was an unprecedented expansion of power. Mm-hmm. And now the Trump administration has invoked an old rule to pause, to basically toss out that regulation, and it's pending a review by the Education Department as Betsy DeVos moves into place, and likely a revision of that in line with Republican complaints. The senators on the Senate Help the Education Committee had been opposing. They had been holding hearings and complaining about the Obama administration's regulation in this regard. So it seems likely that DeVos's department will basically rewrite things in line with the complaints that the senators had before the Trump administration came into office.
Which would be fantastic. I am very glad to hear that, and I think it's going to be an important win for conservatives with respect to education funding. So another item that got mentioned by our president of Minnesotans Against Common Core is H.R. 610. We only have a few minutes left, Joy, so that our time is going so quickly. But could you quickly, in just a couple of minutes, summarize briefly just what H.R. 610 is? And we know that our group here in Minnesota is very concerned that this would lead to basically a federal takeover of all education, both public and private, and even homeschooling.
Yeah, so this is a bill that essentially says that federal funds to states will now be distributed to them only if they basically attach backpack, what was sometimes called backpack funding. Mm-hmm. So rather than all of these various programs that the Department of Education funds, and the money would all be bundled together and block granted back to states on the condition that they divide that money equally among all the children that they have kind of rostered up in their state. And so that money would have to be sent in under the bill to each individual family through the local school districts.
Okay.
It is not clear to me. So I read the bill, and I read some analysis of that from the Homeschool Legal Defense Association. It's not clear to me whether it would force a national voucher system on the country, so that seems like it could be a possibility.
Okay.
The Homeschool Legal Defense Association was opposing the inclusion of homeschool families because they just don't.
I hate to cut you off, but we are down to the wire. I want to thank our listeners for being with us today, and thank you, Joy, for joining us on the radio today.
Thanks for having me.
Stand!